So, you want to be a contractor. Ever wonder what it takes to become a contractor? The journey they go on to get where they are now, or the crazy things they see and hear on the job site. Well, you're in the right spot. Welcome to So You Want to Be a Contractor, the podcast. Join your host, Mike Fisher, as he talks to owners of construction companies from all over about how they got started, how they run their business, and some of the craziest stories they've experienced on their job sites. And now, your host, Mike Fisher.
Welcome to So You Want to Be a Contractor. My name is Mike Fisher. This is episode number 41. My guest today, Ryan Ekedahl of Ekedahl Concrete. How you doing, sir?
I'm pretty good. How are you, Mike?
Good, good. Thanks for joining today. We appreciate you taking the time here. My co-host, Buddy Sella, is a little non-existent today, but hopefully she'll pop in here in a little bit and give us her two cents. But as we start off a lot of these things, let's get to know you a little bit. Tell us your story. First of all, what do you do? How do you do it? Where do you do it? And then get into a little bit of your background, your history.
Sure. No problem. Well, obviously, my name is Ryan Ekedahl, which you just touched on. I'm a second-generation concrete contractor located here in Orange County in Newport Beach, and been in this line of work for, 25 years, ever since I was young enough to know it, you know, what I was doing. Young kid. So
I was going to say, I don't know that you look old enough to be in it for 25 years, but...
Well, thank you. So my father started the business way back in the 70s. And ever since I, you know, obviously growing up, I was just always around concrete and the business and so on. And then towards, I guess, you know, at my adolescence, started getting really more into being interested in it. And that led me to, you know, work in summers and, you know, different sort of times of the year when I wasn't playing sports and in school. And then ultimately, you know, fast forward, and that was my full-time thing. Just went into college and got out and went to work. And then just kept learning.
Did you start, I assume if your dad was a good man and there's still some work ethic in you, I assume you kind of started in the field and had to learn the ropes and form and pour and all those things.
Exactly. Yeah. So started just, it's a labor, learn nothing.
Yeah.
And just manual labor, digging, whatever needed to be done. And then slowly over time did pump concrete for a couple of years, did that. That's a whole other bag too. And labor. And then it just takes time. That's the thing that a lot of people don't understand. It's definitely a marathon. You don't learn this stuff in 1 or 2 years. It's
right.
It's a long journey, you know. So it just takes this reps just day after day of just doing it. And so, you know, got in the SMS to meeting after pumping.
Did you go to school specifically for anything around the business, or
you know?
Actually, you know what? Before we get into that question, let's welcome Maricela. How are you doing, Maricela?
Hey, everyone. I'm never late.
It's
sorry.
She's a contractor. Ryan? She's a contractor. I told Ryan you're a contractor, so this is probably...
There you go. You get a pass.
SOP for a contractor, right?
Well, listen, I try and pride myself in efficiency and organization and being on time. Because I ain't trying to be that kind of contractor, but... You know, it happens to the best of us, man. It happens to the best of us. Ryan, it's good to see you. I apologize for my tardiness.
Not a problem.
It's good to meet you, and it's good to hear your story. I already just really started to plug in. You talk about like a marathon and like you don't learn and get comfortable in what you're doing immediately. What were some of the big milestones that you experienced to really start to feel like an expert in your profession?
Gosh, you know what? That was definitely something that, I mean, even today, there's still stuff that...
I was going to say, do you feel like an expert yet?
No, because it never just gets static. It's always always more. Like, codes are always changing. There's always something that's new. I guess it just...
You mean the state of California doesn't make it that easy for you to run a business? They're always changing.
Well, yeah, we have that. Plus, you have the cities that we all operate in. They're always, the codes are always changing, and it's always affects the price. Obviously, it never goes down. It's always more.
Yeah. It's always going up.
It's all like, I mean, just from what I do on the structural side, a lot of shoring we do, they always want to tweak the deflection of the steel that we have in the caissons. And they always want it tighter, which if it's tighter, that means the steel is getting heavier because they want less deflection, cost more money. So yeah, it's always one. It's always something. But
Ryan, I may have missed this, but why did you get into why are you doing what you do? How did you get into it? Do you love it?
Yeah. So I was telling Mike. So my father started the business back in the 70s, and just as a young kid, you know, just seeing him go to work and not knowing what he was doing, just really little guy. That's all I've known. And then I'd work summers and home from school and, you know, playing football or baseball. I would work here and there. And then I started enjoying the aspect of being outside and that sort of thing, behind a desk. And then like the thought of, you know, we're actually creating something and we're creating somebody's dream and we're bringing it to life off the ground. So I think that's kind of cool. And I just became more and more engrossed in the whole aspect of what we were building. And then numbers guy. So then I started looking, gravitating more towards like estimating after I pumped concrete for a couple of years, did that. And I was in the field for a couple of years. I wanted to learn more on the estimating side. So I went to school for that. And then Mike, you asked earlier about college. I got my degree in construction management.
Okay. So that's what I was going to say. If that was
Go Beach,
give you to go specifically for that.
Well, so I was playing a little bit of JC football. And so I got my AA degree. And then right away, I just wanted to go work. So I went to work in the business and did. But then, you know, as a young father, I knew like eventually my kids are going to end up getting older and be like, oh, well, dad didn't go to college and he's fine, you know? And so I actually just went back and finished up online back.
Good for you, man.
Amazing.
Long time ago, but.
Ryan, I'm not hearing that there was a lot of contention in you coming into the business. And I feel as, you know, sometimes there's that fabric that's a part of the story.
Yeah, especially in a family business.
I never wanted to be, you know, who my dad was or what he was doing. I didn't honor it. It wasn't for me, but I don't feel that coming from you.
No, it's actually pretty funny because my father used to always tell me, he's like, don't ever do what I'm doing. Don't ever get in this.
Wow.
Yeah, he didn't want me in it just for.
Why?
Well, I mean, you're a contractor, so you understand it's tough. It's a tough world.
Yeah.
It's a tough world.
There's very few professions that are easy, though.
There's none. I tell people all the time, like there's a million ways to make a lot of money, and they're all hard.
They're all hard.
You know, it just depends what you're looking for, to be honest with you.
And so, how much is your dad involved in the business today?
None. No. So
what was one of the big shifts you did?
I'm sorry.
What was one of the big shifts you did? Like you've taken over this business?
Yeah, that transition from your dad to you.
I mean, it's been 25 years that I've been in the business. And he's been away from it for about 5 years. So for 20 years, I worked right alongside with him. Very good relationship. And, you know, probably in 2012, 13, I became invested in the business as a partner. My father. Once he turned 70, he wanted to just set sail on it. Prior to that, I was doing the day-to-day operations, I was running the business, and he just wanted to step away. So I bought him out and he's set sailing, you know, so to speak.
Sweet.
Like literally sailing? You see literally sailing?
He's no, but
I was gonna say that'd be a heck of a ride.
Yeah, him and my mom are helping.
He's on a rocking chair somewhere drinking some tea.
No. Yeah. So there.
Ryan, can I ask a personal question?
Sure.
Can I ask you what that relationship of working with your father did for you? Was it good? Was it tough? Would you recommend it? And I'm asking that because we're talking more and more. We talk to contractors and a lot of times they're generational business, right? Like I saw my dad doing it. And number two, I have three sons and all of them, I mean, they're very young right now, but none of them have, they want to be MLB players. That's their goal. I want to play in the MLB. But, you know, there's a really high, yeah, I'd be on TikTok bad and be like, hey. And,
oh, I know.
But what was that like personally? What did that do for your relationship with your father?
You know what? It's interesting because, like you just touched on, it's very common for family businesses in construction. But a lot of the ones I know of, they're not smooth. And so I don't know the outlier because we got along great, easy. And we were very similar personalities. So we saw things along the same lines typically. The only issues that ever presented themselves as being difficult was he was more resistant to changing, where I'm like, want to kind of go this direction. He likes this direction. So that at times was, and that's to be expected, but that at times was a little bit of a struggle, but it wasn't a big one because I was always looking for more. And he liked it just the way it was. So, which I understand that, you know, and he's.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely some comfortability in staying where you're at and doing what you do, but in knowing kind of the expectations at that level. Right. But you said when he started it back in the 70s, it was relatively small and nothing too extreme. Was he growing it when you came into it? Was that growth around did you kind of propel that growth, or maybe both, or what did that process look like, that transition?
It was
not only physically, but like mentally, right? For him too, like getting him to kind of accept some of that stuff.
Yeah, it was definitely growing while he was still involved. And a lot of that had to do with him. And I guess that was 08. Right before that, I was 4 to 08. It was pretty sizable. And I was just looking at creating a different sort of culture, you know, within the company.
What was it? What was the difference you were trying to make?
I wanted it to feel like this is home for everybody. Like we're all one.
Mm-hmm.
I want people that hear the name Ekdahl to be like, God, yeah, I want to go work for those guys. Like I hear them take care of their people. It's a good atmosphere. You know, there's good people there. So I'm always hiring for the person, not the skill.
Mm-hmm.
Skill you can't teach the person. If you're a jerk or...
Say that. Could you please say that one more time? Could you please say that one more time?
I know. Seriously. I mean...
Seriously. You're always hiring for the people. You're not hiring for the skill is what you just said.
Absolutely. Like you
and
can
was
teach
that something
anyone.
You learned?
You could teach anyone to pound a form and nail and, you know, understand elevations, read plans. You can't teach somebody how to treat people right.
Yeah.
You know, do for others, be a team player.
Yeah.
So that's a big deal. So I always refer to Ekdahl as being a destination employer. I want people to come here and stay here, retire here.
Was that thought process something? Employer. Yeah, I like that. I love that term. Was that thought process something that was that you just kind of realized and maybe kind of self-taught there? Or was... Because I ask, because there are a lot of people in this industry and a lot of industries, right? But that look to kind of business coaches and other outside influences, networking groups, to where they kind of feed off of some of those best practices. Was that like, so was that something that you just inherently had within you and wanted to change? Or was there an influence there?
There's definitely a little of both. There's definitely some influence because I have some business coaches, some real high level guys that I speak to in the past, and then other people in the some of the associations that I belong to.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that it just makes a lot of sense, you know, and then I've always thought you have to get along with your colleagues and coworkers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you don't, what's going on here?
Which is, it sounds like you were a little bit ahead of that shift, especially on the construction and contractor side, right? I mean, Back in the day, that mentality of a contractor was get to the job, bust your ass, do your work.
That's right.
I'm the boss, kind of, you know, whip cracking the whip, making you faster, harder, all that kind of stuff, right? And that was the mentality back in the day. But now 2022, I mean, you have to operate the way you guys are operating. Yeah. Mm. But if you were of this mindset 8, 10, 12 years ago, I mean, it sounds like you were pretty far ahead of the curve, right? I mean, because you can't operate today without that mentality, right? I mean,
no.
A 25-year-old isn't going to come to your business and allow you to crack the whip on them.
They don't want to be talked down to. They don't want to be controlled.
Which is not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing at all.
No, I get it. And I always I'm always just repeating that all my superintendents, everyone, like, your guys got to like you. Can't talk down to them. You know, you're going to get more out of them when they respect you and you're not yelling at them. Period. That's just human nature, right?
So funny story. I've never told this story on this podcast, but I was in restaurant management. I know, right? I was in restaurant management for a very long time at a very young age. I started at 20 or 21. And that like alpha mentality manager, like, especially my age, right? I felt like I had something to prove. To my kitchen staff, I was probably harder than I needed to be and kind of pushed them harder than I need to. One Christmas Eve, which if you're in the restaurant business, it's probably one of the busiest days of the year, I had my entire kitchen walk out on me. In the middle of a rush.
Toma.
I was an asshole and I was pushing too hard. So from that day forward, that was the hardest lesson I ever had to learn as a manager and being, you know, in charge of people. But to your point, like, it's the culture and they have to like you. That mentality is
important. So huge. Ryan, you come into the business and one of the big shifts that you did culturally was, you know, creating an atmosphere that was, what did you call it? You're going to have to coin it now. A destination workplace, right?
Destination employer. Correct.
You wanted to be a destination employer. What are some of the other things that you felt were, I feel like with some of your back talk on estimates and numbers, was your father very number margin driven, or was that something that you brought into the business?
He's a numbers guy too.
Okay.
For sure. So that was already kind of there. I kind of went a little bit beyond that. We're looking at like the job costs. Like, I mean, we got budgets for budgets. Like, cause it's like, if you don't get your job costs, then you're screwed. And I have it all real time now, which before we didn't, it was kind of
real time. You're going to have to talk real slow right now, because unfortunately in our industry, we still don't have partners, vendors that are thinking about numbers in this way, profit, margin, real time. Get granular on that if you could.
Yeah, sure. So like the software that we use, I use Sage 100, which is just, it's really good, specific for contractors. And it allows us to job cost everything. So we get a job, the budget's in there, and it's basic update. It's up to the date for the week we're in. So it might be a week behind, but that's pretty darn real
time. Yeah. That's able to, you're able to pivot real quickly on that. Yeah.
How does that software do that?
I'm sorry?
How does the software do that? Like, so how many jobs are you running at one time?
20.
You're running 20 jobs at one time and the software is able to give you real time numbers.
Correct.
What?
Well, just because when I'm
labor hours, materials. Yeah. It's probably pulling all that information.
Yeah. That's weekly. Cause we do payroll weekly. So that's all in those buckets for each job. Then whatever, like my ready mix guy, when I get their payable, my house manager puts it in, that's in the bucket for those jobs. Then I can look at actual where we're at actually versus what was budgeted. Then if I have an issue with labor and I'm like, wow, we're trending to have a big loss here, but we have two more months to go, I can pivot and see what's going on. Like, why are we getting sideways on our labor already? And so we can catch things and correct them rather than after the fact looking back and being like, hey, we lost X and from our labor, we ordered an extra 10 grand in concrete for some reason. Did my estimator miss something? Do we overwork in the field? Is that even right? So
it Ryan, that's us. Incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. So it's a big deal though, because I mean, geez, with being that busy and spread out, we have to know our numbers. Yeah. If you you're going to have problems. I mean, that's kind of what I tell everyone is like, I don't care what business you're in. The numbers don't lie. Sports.
Numbers don't lie.
Construction. The numbers are the numbers. They speak the truth, whether you want to believe it or not. That's real.
And that's something because you related to baseball a little bit. A lot of guys are looking at batting average and home runs, and you're into the analytics of the win rate and the spin rates. And
absolutely.
You're pretty granular. Yeah.
Listen,
if we're talking baseball, I'm still not totally convinced that analytics baseball is the way to go. If someone's on fire, you keep them on the mound, dude. Don't pull them out. That's anyways, true. I would have never said that comment 10 years ago because I hated baseball, but I have come to the light. So Ryan, your dad was a numbers guy. That's in your DNA. That's in your genetics. How far down did you get into numbers, and how much does that drive your daily decisions and like on a macro level, your business decisions?
Is that your kind of day to day, or is that your,
I'm always keeping my finger on the pulse of the numbers because I mean, when we're as busy as we are, and if I have clients that aren't paying, you know, every net 30, if it's pushing to 45, 60, I'm going to have problems because the bills are still coming in and those got to get paid regardless. So I'm always keeping my finger on the pulse of that 100%. You know, probably every couple of days I'm looking to see where we're at, because it changes so fast, ebbs and flows. Yeah. You know, so I'm looking at our burn rate, like what it costs to keep the business going on a daily basis. And if I'm looking at the financials the money going out versus going in, if I'm paying somebody a couple of days too soon, at maybe 27 days, and on the flip side, I'm not getting paid for 40 days. It doesn't seem like a big deal, but over 20 jobs and all that, you're looking at six figures sideways every 4 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. You become a bank.
I tell people all the time, like, you guys are not the bank, guys. You gotta pay your bills.
Yeah. You become the bank. And that's something my own business coach has been really trying to talk me out of. Like, listen, you got to be, you're not a bank. You're a GC in residential construction. You're not a bank.
100%. Yep.
So, Ryan, you're running 20 jobs at a time. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the infrastructure of your business, your marketing, your sales, and how big your team is, how you have organized your business in such a way to facilitate 20 jobs at the same time. That's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. It is. You know, I have really good superintendents, and most of them were grown, you know, organically from within. They started with labor, just learned, were patient, and just wanted to succeed and got the opportunity, and they went with it. So
that destination employer is working for you.
Absolutely. And so a lot of the more senior guys, they're, you know, tasked with operating on, you know, 2 to 5 jobs, watching those. And I break it down into geography. Like I have 4 jobs within a 8-mile radius. This one superintendent could potentially run those. And on the flip side, there's 20, but some are just a slab on grade, which is fine. Mm-hmm. And then others are a big full basement with a podium deck or whatever else.
Totally.
Yeah. So they're not.
So give me a lens into your business. How many, you're running 20 jobs. How much staff do you have versus how many infilled guys? Like, what does your outfit look like?
We're running usually 80 to 100 employees total.
Incredible.
And then.
What's the radius that you serve? Are you serving just. Coastal Inc. So you're staying in one county.
Correct. I mean, I've gone up into Brentwood and I'm actually starting to make a strong push to go up there because it lends itself. The geography is very similar to Coastal Orange County. Hillsides, hillside basements, multiple level concrete homes, big, big, complicated concrete homes. So tees up kind of with how we're run. And then we'll go down La Jolla, Del Mar as well. It kind of depends. We've even done, a job in Catalina a few years ago.
Wow. How you get a bunch of concrete in Catalina?
I was going to say, how big was that boat?
They actually have one little tiny ready-mix plant out there.
Do they really?
In one pond, awesome. Yeah.
And you probably kept them busy for 2 months, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you have about 20 jobs. You run in basically one county. You have, give or take, 80 to 100 employees. What is your day-to-day as a leader of this business look like? Where do you have to be spending your energy to make sure that all of these, you know...
It's tough juggling all that. So it's like, I always got to make sure I'm working on the business, in the business. So yeah, I'm trying to
Which 30, is a numbers 000. Guy is not easy, right?
It's not easy. So yeah, you know, and I let our senior staff, everyone, like, work autonomously. You know, a decision needs to be made, make the decision. If you come to me with a question, have an answer ready. Don't just come to me to solve your problem. Like, I have other stuff I need to look at. So if I'm, I always tell people, if I'm doing your job or trying to do your job, that's a problem. Nobody wants to be micromanaged.
Totally.
And I need to stay in my sphere of influence and what I am a master at, which is like generating new business, watching the numbers, gaining more teammates for the business, more quality people, and then let them do what they're exceptional at, which is building, you know, awesome foundations.
Yeah. What does your sales process look like then, if that is your sphere of influence and you have this many mouths to feed? How do you keep that much business coming in?
Looking for new opportunities that kind of line itself up to how we're built. Some of those smaller commercial parking garages. So I'm looking at that. We did a bunch of big site work for a water park out here in Irvine Wild Rivers, which is...
Oh, did you do that?
We did all...
Yeah, some of that?
We did most of the concrete there.
That's awesome.
So little things like that we typically wouldn't be doing, but just always kind of looking for, you know, maybe something, a little segment of the market that we're not touching that we can get into. And then also there's always other concrete contractor or other... general contractors that are out there that are newer or younger, and just letting them know that, hey, I know you're new, but you need to kind of look at who you're bringing in to your team, because we could really help you out. We don't need our handheld. We've been here before. We can coordinate with your framer, your MEP and everything else that we'll need on the front end of the job to kind of make it successful. So, and then just making sure that we're always taking care of our clients, because it's all...
Who is your client? Ryan, is your client other GCs?
Yes.
It's 100% of the time.
99% of the time. Every blue moon, we might have an older owner builder, but it's usually a general contractor. And so making sure that their needs are always not just met, but exceeded. Making sure that they know we're taking care of them. Their best interest is always a hard. We don't... And the thing is, I'm in the concrete industry, and you know, we build concrete structures, but I want it to be beautiful. Like, I don't want people to feel like, oh God, it looks like crap. Because I've heard it from other people out there and other companies. I want them to feel like, hey, we got the best. And even though this is getting drywalled and framed, look at those walls. This is why we hired.
I was going to say that's a prideful position to take as a concrete guy, right? I mean, because 99% of the time your work isn't even seen or noticeable when the thing's and done, right? Well, it's like an electrician that actually takes time to like make sure his wires are clean and out of the way and buttoned up and all that stuff behind the walls. Like, there's pride in that.
That electrician's not going to get a call back because something's not working.
Right.
Like our foundations aren't going to have leaks and different things that go on. So they're buying a premium service, premium product. And I want to make sure that they're getting it, not just getting like the standard. Because if I'm just providing the standard, then it's all numbers. Then I'm a commodity. It's all numbers. And I always try to tell people,
I love that mentality.
Hey, it's so good. I need you to say that again almost.
I'm not going to be the cheap guy. I don't want to be the cheap guy, because there's a premium product I'm giving you. I'm providing for, you know, fee, obviously. And if it's all numbers, then you're just a commodity. It doesn't...
Yep.
Which I don't want to be like that.
Yeah, you ain't for sale.
Because there's always another cheaper number. Always.
Always.
In every business.
So go back to the marketing a little bit. Your dad started this a long time ago. You guys are known and successful in the residential space and that, you know, the foundations and all that. But you said you've kind of like you took the welder's job and some commercial parking structures. Are you actively looking for those? And if so, how? Or mm-hmm. are those coming through relationships and mm-hmm. word of mouth? Like, hey, these guys did it, you know, one GC talks to another GC and says, no, hey, these guys did a great mm-hmm. job on this house. They could probably do your parking structure. How does that business develop?
It's usually based off of my network.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So I think that's a big deal.
Yeah.
So it's always a little like your network is your net worth.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of makes sense. So I always kind of lean into.
I feel like you by listening to like Ed Mylett together. Like,
he's great. He's great.
I'm listening to him on my way to work.
He's great. So yeah, it's, we got to help each other out. That's how I look at it. Like,
yeah.
My friends in the industry, it's like, okay, I'm trying to get you a lead over here. A lot of times they'll reciprocate. Hey, Ryan, just recently, one of my shoring contractors I work with called. And he's like, hey, I got a job. They're looking for somebody. Would you be interested? I'm like, absolutely. So that's looking pretty promising, just stuff like that. And every now and then I'll reach out like a quote unquote cold call, but that's mm-hmm. really selective. It's really selective. Yeah. It's got to be like something that's in the area kind of, you know, but I'm not,
gotta make sense.
I'm not knocking on doors for like commercial jobs. So it's usually
what's great about the way you operate and that networking, right? Like you've already got that pride in workmanship built into the culture of your business to the point where like you don't care what the job is, you want it to be a premium product, right? And mm-hmm. where that makes you successful is in those relationships and those networks that, hey, you know, you're bringing Ryan in because they know what they're doing. Like, hey, we got a job for you, and those referrals. You don't have to change the way you do business to make sure that you're impressing somebody, to make sure that somebody else's word is being stood.
Yeah.
You guys already operate that way to the point where like, it's just bringing in Ryan, we're doing a job. And then you already know that's going to turn out positively for the future, for future work as well. I mean, so
correct.
All I'm saying is that mentality kind of creates a domino effect to the point where like the business just keeps replicating itself and bringing itself to you.
Yeah, and I think the other important thing is why I don't just go and just go full steam and try to get all this commercial stuff is I don't want what we've been creating and building over the last 45 years to just evaporate overnight, which it could if people get too busy, which happens, and all of a sudden mm-hmm. they're focused on just numbers, and all of a sudden you got all this commercial work or whatever other sector you're trying to get into, and then your bread and butter is suffering. You're a long time cold call. You're all of a sudden like shit. You have one guy on the job. You're getting calls. Yeah. Then all of a sudden you just open the door for your competitor to walk right in.
Yep.
And
lost. Because people have a short term memory a lot of times. Even if you work for them for 20 years, it's business. A lot of times they'll hire that other guy if you're not following through with your obligation. And then you just kissed 20 years goodbye. So that's it's a fine line, you know, so that's why I'm pretty selective and stepping outside of, exactly what we do day to day and other sort of
smart.
We spoke with an electrical residential contractor who's kind of talking about the same thing that you're talking about, where he for years was residential, then went into commercial and learned some really hard lessons about commercial construction, and he swore that off. He's like, this is my bread and butter, this is what I'm good at, and I don't work, he knows who he's not going to work for, and he knows what he does work with, and that's period. I'm not interested, I don't need to dabble in anything else. This is what I am good at, and this is my lane, and I stay there
100%. And just to piggyback off that is the fact that if I go in and I know we could do like a six-story parking garage. I know it.
Yeah.
But the guys that do it all the time, they're going to be more efficient.
Right.
So their margins are going to be tighter, but they're going to be the same profitability. Is that if that makes sense?
Yes. Where
I'll be
and then what for?
Yeah.
I'll be a lot more inefficient. We'll get it done. You know, won't be as profitable likely. So yeah, I think a lot of times people are always like, they're just, grass is always greener. Yeah. You know, this, that, and say, no, it's greener where you sit and water it. Stay in your lane, you know, and just be the best at one thing.
But
just like Jordan, Kobe, those guys, they were the best at one thing. You don't need all this other.
Yeah. I think Brian, that's one of the full of the
inspirational one-liners too. He slipped that one in and nobody caught it, but he said the grass is greener where you sit and water it. That's
right. That's just in life, not just business. Yeah. You know, relationships, 100%. Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the questions I asked you initially is when did you start to feel like you were mastering feeling like a master of certain parts of your business? And for me, that's really where I started to feel like I haven't arrived. There's a long way to go, but I really started to feel like I became a master of this part of my business when I figured out my lane. The grass was not always greener. I always thought that I wanted to be the business that did, you know, those 40,000 square foot homes. And then I started to do some of where that was leading. And I was like, this is miserable. I'm not having any fun. Like, I don't want to be on one project for 5 years. And I figured out my lane and I really started to water it where you can put grass in a lane. But that's really start where
now we're mixing up all the metaphors.
All the metaphors in there, you know, just I'm
love it.
Mixing it all up. But like that it is true. That's really where you start to master your business is, this is my niche. This is what I'm really good at. And I'm going to feed it.
And that takes time and discipline too, right? I mean, so many people, when you're early on, and I'm sure your dad could probably speak to it, like he probably was taking any job that he could, right? That involved concrete because you got to make money at some, but you know, when you get to that point where you're becoming a little bit more stable, that's where the discipline and that knowledge comes in to be able to become profitable.
Ryan.
Absolutely.
One of the things that I've heard you say that I'm just connecting the dots here in terms of your network and your connection is it sounds like people are really important to you. Culture driven. You talked a little bit. You said it like at the end of a sentence is business coaches and associations. And that's also a common trend, Mike, in previous conversations that we've had with other very successful contractors is they have other people pouring into them. At what point was that something that you started to invest in? Business people speaking into you?
Probably. It's probably been about 10 years, but the last like 5-6, it's become even more important to me because I don't care how good you're at something, like the best of the best have coaches. Tiger Woods had a swing coach. I mean, they all have coaches. It's kind of funny, but it's like, you know, and then even though their main business might be whatever other industry, there's a lot of knowledge there. And just the way they can kind of open your eyes to see something from a different perspective, a lot of knowledge. I've learned a lot from a couple of these guys. So that's a big deal though to me. And then, you know, in terms of mastering, I think once I became the sole owner of the business, about 5 years ago, I was really able to step into what I like, which is leading people and motivating and just driving like that sort of environment. Cause that's just natural. It's innate to me. It's just natural for me.
Was the business coach something that was pretty easy for you to do? Or was that something that you like a hurdle you had to clear from egotistical,
machista.
Yeah.
You know what? No ego there. It was all just, it was pretty easy.
What does that relationship look like for you today? Like how often are you seeking, are you seeing a business coach? How often do you go to your, you know, your associations and look for direction?
The association, I was on the board and it was a lot of work. So a lot of that now is like random Zooms here and there with some of the key executives in the board and the business coaches, all kind of ebb and flow, but I still, you know, can text them or different things come up. Because there's definitely something cost there.
And they're not cheap. No. They're not cheap.
If not by money, by time investment too, right? I mean, to get anything out of them, you got to invest quite a bit of time.
Correct.
Yeah, it definitely isn't something that, it's a repetitive nature of it. Like, it's not something that changes. They tell you 1 month and things are golden. That's like months you can't
show
months.
Up in, you don't show up in once to get all your questions answered.
I did probably 2 years straight.
Yeah.
And now I still will like have different sort of conversations with these people, but it's not like a monthly thing or weekly anymore.
So Raya, we've talked about the way that your business is set up, how much volume you have. Would you say that you found a sweet spot in your business, or are you still like, no, I need to grow. We need to grow at X percent.
I don't have any like long-term like goals on numbers, but I do know if you don't grow, you die. Period.
Yeah.
In business. So yeah. I know that we got to keep pushing. Got to keep pushing.
What does that look like?
Geographically, like kind of touched on earlier, go up, start. Cause I have a lot of clients that are up in LA. They're big in LA. And I just chosen to not actively like seek jobs up there. So I don't want to water down the Orange County, our work here.
Yeah.
So it's going to take a lot of effort, but it's going to be something that will allow us to continue to grow up in LA market. Beverly Hills, Malibu, Palisades, that sort of area, which I have some contacts at. So that's the next step. Cause you just can't just maintain status quo. Cause you're going to drop off. You got to keep growing. Like, same with employees, like key members. You always want two. Two is one. One is none. You can't just have one.
Here's another one.
Yeah, there you go.
Put it
in the bank. What's that? Two,
two
is one,
one,
one, is,
one
none.
Is none. Can you break that down for a girl?
If you have one,
it's like hockey. It's like a one goal league. One goal lead in hockey is the worst league you can have because you're immediately tied and then screwed if you give one up.
If you have only one person that does one,
no margin for error.
Okay.
One position, if he's the only person that does it and he's busy, what if he leaves? They got a bug up their ass and they're gone and you're going, what? So you definitely want to have a backup for everything.
Yeah.
And even if it's somebody who's like a junior estimator for estimator, an intern for your project managers, assistant office manager, that's kind of an assistant superintendent kind of goes on. That way you're not stuck. And then also on the flip side, you're able to kind of grow organically, get them the knowledge.
I was going
to
say, I feel like that helps from a retention standpoint, because if you're always pushing people up the ladder, the people at the bottom know that if I work hard, I will get pushed up the ladder.
Yeah. Then that's where I try to really focus and make sure I hit home on people that are hired is that, I'm going to set a path for you. Here's the path to go down to get to the next rung of the ladder to keep going up and up and up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want this to be like right here. Like, there's opportunity. Yeah. Like obviously it's up to the person, but it's there.
How do you balance the two is one, one is none, and making sure that you have the support that you need so that you're not at none against your numbers, right?
So very hard, just finding good people. So it all boils down to like, once you go through, you pay for the ads, you pay for your time, essentially when you interview, and then you hire someone, you're paying, train them. You want to keep them. It's expensive to keep hiring and firing. So, to answer your question, it's like, just basically just grow organically and then just keep hitting that home to fill these other spots so you're not left holding the bag if somebody leaves in a key spot.
And we're talking about the culture a little bit. I always pull up kind of websites and Instagram and all that kind of stuff while we're talking, but I'm on your Instagram right now. Probably see half of these pictures are your guys in the middle of a pour holding up gift cards. So kind of speak to that a little bit, right?
I mean, what is that?
And you're obviously using your Instagram and your platform. It sounds like you don't need it to generate business, right? Because you've got that reputation, but it looks like you're using it more to kind of show yourself off and become that what we talked about earlier, that destination employer.
So bingo.
Can I speak to why are these guys all holding, why are they all holding gift
cards? Employee of the month.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's what that was just recently. So every month, you know, getting feedback from my superintendents, who's stepping up, even if they're a laborer who's been with the business for a month, like who is it? Somebody that's stepping up. I want them to understand that they're noticed, they're appreciated, and it's good for the other guys on the crews to see that and to know, like, okay,
that's available. That's there.
Paying attention. Yeah. They're paying. Yeah. We're not just out here by ourselves.
Well, I love that you're putting it on your social media, right? I mean, I was just going to say that. You've understood. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are doing Employee of the Month, and you should be. And if you're doing Employee of the Month, you're doing some sort of appreciation, showing appreciation and recognizing the people that are working hard. But you're taking it to the next level. You're showing the world, right? Look, this is what it feels like and what it looks like and the opportunity that's there at Ecodol Concrete. And we are that destination employer.
We are. Yeah. I mean, and, I take it really personal that I keep these guys all busy. They have bills, they have families, they have kids.
Yes.
They have lives. And that's a big responsibility.
It is.
And I take it to heart. It's like, I don't want somebody to have to sit at home and not earn money because we're slow or this or that. So that creates even more of a desire to like keep pushing.
Yep.
Keep pushing, keep growing, keep getting more business, keep getting more great people in the business. So that's always my goal.
I respect that's that awesome. So much. I respect that so much. It is a tremendous responsibility to take on an employee. And even in our seasonal work, you know, sometimes our construction ebbs and it flows. But on the flow, like these are people that still have responsibilities, that have families, they have bills. And I take that equally very, very seriously.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Did you have something else you want to ask?
No, I feel like I wanted to make sure that we got into our rapid fire.
I was going to say, yeah, we're that's exactly where I was going. This is,
I mean, you and I are just
kidding. So I know we're coming up on a hard stop, so I wanted to get into that for sure. But this is one of many, what I want to say, positives there that Body Sale has brought to this a podcast as a co-host that she pushed her way into to being a co-host. But this has been an awesome part of it. So I will let her.
Yeah. So, you know, part of me joining Mike into this, this platform and on this podcast is because I really want one to bring a voice and a face, to people who are in our industry. You know, there's a lot of good guys out there. And yet, you know, it's the bad guys in our industry that ruin our reputation. So I love the platform that this is to give the voices to the Ryans of the world, who, you know, you guys are doing it well. You're doing it well. But the other part of it is that I really appreciate listening to the podcasts that give me nuggets of like, oh, I didn't think about that, or I want to use that. They become a resource. Cool. And so this is the part of the podcast I ask our guests the same four questions every time, because if anyone's listening and maybe they're not thinking of doing business a certain way, or maybe there's something that you can influence them to think about, this is the part where we make sure we nail that down. So it's the same four questions, Ryan. The first question is, and I feel like I wrote it down because I'm going to look at it after I get off this podcast, is what is one resource you cannot do your business without and why?
Oh, gee, that's easy. My accounting software, my project management software.
Is that Sage 100? Yeah. Is that what you said it was?
Yes.
Sage 100. Yep. And so if you missed the part of our podcast where Ryan's talking about, he is looking at his data, his margins in real time. And that is real powerful. Sage 100.
It's real powerful. You got to know your numbers. You're going to die. You're going to go out. You're going to be out of business before you know it.
Sage 100.
For sure.
I wrote that down. Thank you for that nugget. If you helped anyone, you helped like this person right here. Thank you so much for that.
We're going to go after our sponsor from Sage 100 next.
Yeah, Sage 100. If you're listening, I'm going to at you. Feel free to be our first sponsor. The second question, what's the best advice someone has given you?
Be present. My father used to say that when I was a young kid and I would just laugh it off. I would just laugh it off. But being present in whatever you're doing, whatever, like the people you're talking to, be present. Don't be looking at your iWatch and your notifications and that. Life's short. Life's so short.
Yeah.
You want to be present for those moments. It's like with your kids, like with my kids, like, and sometimes, you know, we're human. I get caught up with emails and stuff. And while they're right here, I'm like, put the phone away.
Yeah.
Or whatever. That's going to be there. All the emails, they're going to be there tomorrow. Or
they will be.
Nobody else is getting rid of them and checking them. Yep. They'll be there.
Yeah. I think that's the big deal, is just being present in whatever you're doing. Because life, every day is a gift. I always say that to people. And they're like, there he goes again. But it is. It's true.
It is.
It is a gift.
It is. You know, your dad telling you that 20 years ago, whatever, be present.
Way ahead of the curve.
Way ahead of the curve. Because today, with our distractions and everything is at our way. I mean, you can be distracted in anything. So being present is absolutely a gift. And it's a skill. Swear, it's a skill. If you can learn to be present, that's a
struggle. You got to work hard at that for sure.
Hard for me. It is really hard for me because I have a lot of stuff going on in my head.
Yeah,
but it's a big deal though.
It is a big deal.
Big deal.
It's a tool. If you learn how to do it,
yes,
it's a big tool.
Yeah, 100%.
Is there a book or a podcast that you love? Third question: is there a book or a podcast that you love and you'd recommend?
Well, beyond your guys' podcast,
we went from zero through like the first 15 episodes of Marisela was on to that sort of realm.
I would say
it's almost like we're baiting these people.
That's too funny. A book or podcast. I wish I read a little more, to be honest with you, but I do listen to a lot of podcasts. Probably Andy Frisella's podcast, one of my favorites.
Why?
I don't even know who that is.
He's actually in the health and fitness industry. He owns a supplement company, but he's just a staunch American. He's a self-made, I don't know if he's a billionaire, darn close, self-made guy. American, true, and just a lot of good business knowledge on there. His probably my favorite, him, and then you mentioned Ed Milet.
Did he start 75 Hard? Is that his thing?
That's his like program, but yeah, his podcast, I forget what it was called, MF CEO or something like that.
Tell me his name again. Andy Frisella.
Andy Frisella.
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 Yeah.
Frisella.
Frisella. Cool. So I'm taking that health and fitness is really important to you as well.
Oh, yeah. It is.
So that might segue into my fourth question that I ask every guest of ours is, you know, you're a lot of things. You have a lot of responsibilities, Ryan. You have 100 employees. You're running a lot of projects at one time. You carry a lot of that weight, but is there
kids, family,
all of it? I mean, you live in freaking Orange County, which is a big responsibility. But is there one habit that you have that is just for you, that you give yourself so that you can pour into others?
That's it. Yeah. Working out. That's my deal.
How many times a day? What does that look like? Are you a 3:30 in the morning guy? Cause we have had a chick.
I'm a 4:30.
4:30
in the morning.
Still too early, but respectable.
I get it. I get up. The kids are sleeping. You know, I can just do my own thing, put my own mask on, and just worry about Ryan, put my headphones on, work out. So that's every day I'm doing something.
Every day you're doing something, 4:30 in the morning. Are you driving? Are you waking up driving to like a CrossFit gym, or are you doing it home? Like, what is...
I have a pretty elaborate like garage gym.
Excellent.
That I've had for probably 10 years now. I just got tired of going to like, you know, Equinox, whatever it was.
Like, yeah.
Right there, you got to wait around for people that are there to meet people. And it's like, I just want to get in and get out.
Yeah.
So I do that. And then I'm a pretty big paddler, like outrigger canoe and stand up paddling. I've done a bunch of races. I paddled from Catalina to Newport Beach before.
What the
fuck? So I know, pretty extreme stuff.
Underachiever. Underachiever.
This guy.
You should do more, Ryan. You should do more.
This guy. Yeah,
I think it's just important just because no one's calling me that early in the morning.
Yes.
Right?
That is the gift. That is the gift.
I can just disappear.
Yeah. At 4:30 in the morning, no one's calling you. No emails need to be replied to.
Hopefully.
Yeah. But if they are, they're being very disrespectful. That is, and I know, I mean, I used to work out at 5:30 in the morning. I used to do CrossFit when CrossFit was hot, and it was the 5:30 in the morning. The key to waking up early, Mike, and this is something for us to like marinate on, is to going to sleep early. Yes or no, Ryan?
Try to. Yeah. I don't get enough sleep, but I try at least get to sleep by 10 or 10:30.
Yeah.
It's hard though.
Yeah, I'm still
I'm a restaurant management guy. I'm like midnight or 1 a.m. Restaurant years.
I would never sacrifice my nights for a morning. I love my mornings.
Yeah.
Love
them. Awesome.
Yeah. 4:30 awesome. In the morning. 2 is 1. 1 is none. The grass is greener where you water it. Destination employer. Like, I'm writing those on a freaking post-it and I'm going to put it on my computer. That was awesome. That's all I got.
This has been amazing. Yeah, this has been awesome. We appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Give a shout out. Let people know where to find you, how to look at your work, how to get a hold of you guys.
Sure. Yep. Instagram is at Ecadol Concrete. And then same with the website. You can reach out either one of those places and reach out to me directly. I'm more than happy to talk to anybody. Not a problem.
Awesome.
Thanks for your time, Ryan. It was really nice meeting
Ryan,
you.
Yeah, Ryan, been amazing. Appreciate
Likewise.
It.
Likewise. Thank you both.
All right. Take care.
Stay safe out there.
Yeah, you as well. Have a good day.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you had a good time, be sure to hit that subscribe button to get all the latest episodes. And if you had a really good time, leave a review to let us know what you thought. Until then, go gather some crazy stories on your job sites, and we'll see you next time on So, You Want to Be a Contractor.